hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Then I started getting pissed off at him, so I just emptied both guns into him.
They did really bad things to get drugs.
There were scuff marks, shoe prints, a ball peen hammer, a large puddle of blood.
I was young, I was beautiful, I had the whole world in front of me.
I'm sitting on death row. How do you accept that?
There was very little scientific evidence. They ran their mouths until they convicted themselves.
On this episode, two criminals exclusively from maximum security prisons.
So I'm like, okay, well, I'm just gonna shoot my way out of this.
I could have had a hunting accident happen at any time.
Two lady lovers dubbed the real Thelma and Louise.
They had been picking up men in strip joints, engaging in sex with them, robbing them at gunpoint.
A gorgeous model gone bad and her crooked gal pal shot 3 men in 10 days.
And a murderous mom makes her son a killer.
How do you convince your kids to carry out a murder plot?
I love my mom. I freaked out. I killed a man. I blew his face off.
Cannibalism is not my choice.
I'm Bernadette Eady, and I'm serving a natural life sentence for 3 counts of attempted murder, armed robbery, and armed burglary.
A hot, violent wind raged, whipping palm trees and setting nerves on edge. Somewhere in a no-tell motel, a sudden blast dotted the walls with blood.
At 4 a.m, an employee coming to work at the hotel sees Eddie in a pool of blood, crawling, he's been shot, and from there, everything in the story is in dispute.
Sirens pierced the night as neighbors, cops, and paramedics raced to a crime scene. The 41-year-old victim was married. Eddie Cusa, a popular car dealer, clung to life. He had been shot point blank in the head. Just a few hours earlier, Eddie had been partying with 2 ladies in Boca Raton.
They had been picking up men in strip joints, talking them into going to hotel rooms, and after engaging in sex with them, robbing them at gunpoint.
Linda's wearing a black halter top and a short skirt that's skin tight. Bernadette's all in white. He bought them drinks. Eddie's 300 pounds. So you have to figure that he knows he's being hustled, but maybe he kind of likes it.
The burglary and attempted murder of Eddie Cusa made tabloid headlines. Linda Goodmote, a 30-year-old stripper, and her 23-year-old lover, Bernadette Eady, were infamous. The press dubbed them the real-life Thelma and Louise.
They were 2 girls on a crime wave, and they shot a couple of guys, like in the movie Thelma and Louise.
Bernadette was the celebrity. Every time she walks in the courtroom, she's all over the papers.
Bernadette was born on May 16, 1967, to a drug-addicted mother.
My mother was young. She had a lot of anger. I was very, scared of my mother.
When I talk about abusive early years, I'm talking about 6 years and under, being tied to a bed with a bucket of water while her mom works the streets.
When Bernadette was 9, her mother relinquished her to the state of Florida.
I was placed in group homes, foster homes. I ran away all the time because A, I didn't want to be grown. B, I felt like if my mother couldn't love me, they couldn't, so nobody loved me.
Between 1977 and 1981, Bernadette lived in 13 different foster homes. She was later institutionalized.
When there were no more foster homes for her, then the state put her in a mental institution.
I was very angry, very confused. I lashed out. I fought people.
There was no way this girl's going to grow up and go to the prom and be a soccer mom in the age of 35. It's not going to happen. And it didn't.
At 14, Bernadette was fostered by Roscoe and Penny Eady, a couple who worked for child services.
They offered to adopt her, and she refused. but she took their last name. She didn't know how to accept their offer of love to her.
Despite the ED's efforts to help her, when Bernadette wanted something, she didn't hesitate to steal it.
They were just simple thievery type, faceless type crime. I wanted decent things.
And to get those decent things, Bernadette committed burglary. Locked up before her 16th birthday, Bernadette Eady was well on her way to becoming a career criminal.
So she turned from petty crimes to major crimes, and that's when she turned to burglary.
I've been in prison, basically, all my life, since I was a child.
Coming of age behind bars, Bernadette navigated her budding sexuality through relationships with older female inmates.
I seeked out women, but not so much sexually, but I guess looking for that mother figure.
After serving 6 years for petty crimes, Bernadette was paroled. But it wasn't long before she was arrested for theft again.
I was convicted, so you don't get much opportunity for jobs, so my instinct was, you know, burglary.
But a sympathetic judge gave Bernadette a second chance. Instead of sending her to prison for 26 years, the judge surrendered 23-year-old Bernadette to the custody of her foster parents. The punishment, probation, and 2 years house arrest.
He said, "God forbid if I rule in your favor and you go out and hurt somebody else. If you fail us, the first thing from the lips of the prosecutor, with great justification, will be, 'Judge, remember Bernadette Eady? She duped you.'"
I was gonna really try to make an effort to do everything the correct way.
Except it turned out badly. Very badly, very quickly.
Within days of receiving a get-out-of-jail-free card, Bernadette met 30-year-old Linda Goodmote through a former inmate, and Bernadette was spellbound.
I was still searching for that mother figure, and then we fell into a relationship.
She's a beautiful, sexy woman, and Bernadette's in love.
Linda, a local stripper, moonlighted by dancing at private parties.
She dazzled me. She did well. She lived in a nice house. We just really developed, you know, a bond.
Powerless in the face of Linda's allure, Bernadette defied the judge's directive by slinking out of the house after her foster parents were asleep.
Damn, one night I just, more or less, I snuck out of the house. We went to a club and it was where Linda worked.
In love and out of control, Bernadette partied with girlfriend Linda till the morning.
Bernadette didn't stay at home. Her foster parents called probation and the judge issued an arrest warrant.
I got paranoid and scared and I never returned back to my foster parents.
Bernadette's infatuation with Linda would soon trigger a chain of events that would put the 23-year-old away for life. Coming up, from a lap dance to a brutal shooting.
She had the gun and I heard a gunshot. Oh man, what the hell?
But did they blame the wrong woman?
She was sent to prison for life on a lie.
I would sacrifice me for somebody, all for the name of love.
And later, a mother who turned her children into killers.
I love my mom. I don't feel like what I did was astronomically bad because it wasn't cold-blooded murder.
At 23, Bernadette Eady was a seasoned criminal. While in prison for burglary, a compassionate judge, hoping for rehabilitation, sentenced her to probation and house arrest. But within days, Bernadette fell head over heels for 30-year-old Linda Goodmote, an attractive, thrill-seeking stripper. Before long, the pair began a 10-day crime spree.
And then we fell into a relationship, a companionship, an understanding.
This was an intelligent woman, older than her, living the life that Bernadette respected.
Linda was a woman with expensive tastes. And to keep her interested, Bernadette knew she needed cash.
We needed money to pay rent. My only thing that I know best is to steal. And I committed the burglary.
On the afternoon of May 19th, 1991, Bernadette broke into the Carroll residence. When teens Jay and Kevin Carroll interrupted the burglary in progress, they were confronted by a desperate woman who had no intention of returning to prison.
I didn't want to hurt nobody, I mean, kill nobody or nothing like that. You know, you see people all day long on TV, they get shot and they are okay. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm just gonna shoot my way out of this. So I pulled the gun out and the kid behind me started to say something and the young one was coming and I'm like, no. And I just started shooting a gun. At that point, I ran out the door.
Bernadette fired all six rounds, emptying the gun. As a result, the Carroll boys sustained critical wounds. Kevin was shot in the chest and abdomen, while a bullet grazed Jay's heart.
It's remarkable the Carroll brothers didn't die as many times as they were shot.
From their hospital beds, the boys described the attack. They were painstakingly accurate, except when it came to one minor detail, the gender of the assailant.
They thought it was a guy. Bernadette had broad shoulders and her hair was cropped short in the front. And the be on the lookout that was issued by the police was for a male.
I called Linda. I'm like, you know, I'm in big trouble. I shot somebody.
Despite the close call, Bernadette once again appeared to have skated on a serious charge. And girlfriend Linda barely batted an eyelash.
Linda actually handled it well. She told me to stop and get bullets for the gun because I shot. Whatever was in the clip, it wasn't like, oh my God. No, it's on with the daily routine. We gotta go out tonight and go work.
And by work, Linda meant a con job. According to Bernadette, the girls hit the clubs that night, packing heat and trolling for an easy mark.
She knows money and she's like, well, I'll just, you know, go to the club and I'll find somebody and we'll pick them up and we'll roll them.
I think if Linda told Bernadette to jump on the railroad tracks and stop that train, Bernadette would have done it.
Linda says, I can spot guys with money and I can talk them out of their wallets.
That night, Linda spied a fat cat and his name was Eddie Cusa.
Mr. Cusa caught her eye, she caught his. You know, I sat back and allowed her to do her thing. You know, more that she dished him in.
Eddie Cusa is a guy who likes to be liked. He'd drop $100 a night and buy people drinks. He was wearing his diamond Rolex and thick gold chains, and he's got a bankroll. So, kind of obvious.
After hours of flirting and drinking, Eddie, Linda, and Bernadette took the party to a nearby hotel for some private lap dances. Bernadette says she faded into the background as Linda worked her magic.
I'm not real comfortable with men in a sexual basis. I turn on the radio, find a little music, and I'm gonna leave them to their self.
Linda would bring Bernadette along as a tag-along when she had stripping engagements.
He's laying on the bed, she's over him, dancing a little.
It's almost like Bernadette was a plaything to Linda. She toyed with the men that she stripped for.
What happened next depends on who is telling the story.
Here's Linda's story. She was dancing for Eddie, and then she doesn't know this is coming. She hears a pow. Bernadette shot him. Bernadette's story. Linda's dancing for Eddie, and then Linda pulls out a gun from her skirt, and to her total surprise, she shoots Eddie.
She's like, help me out. Help me roll him over. And I helped roll him over for her to get his wallet. I'm like thinking, oh my God.
At 4 a.m, an employee coming to work at the hotel sees Eddie in a pool of blood, crawling. He's been shot. There's a trail of blood leading all the way up the stairs into his room. In the room, there's lamps, tables, chairs, all knocked down like a pinball. Somehow, he found the strength to get the hell out of it.
While Eddie Cusa lingered in a coma, there was a break in the case. A witness overheard Linda and Bernadette bragging about shooting a fat guy. Linda was arrested within days. The police then went on the hunt for Bernadette. Coming up, the final showdown.
They find Bernadette and they send a SWAT team.
They just swarmed, told them to get on the ground and everything.
And they arrest her and then in her pants, in her crotch, is the gun that was used to shoot Eddie Cusa.
Ends in a final realization.
I got my chance and I blew it.
While out on parole, lifetime petty criminal Bernadette Eady hooked up with Linda Goodmode, a seductive stripper. Before long, the pair were robbing rich men at gunpoint. After shooting Eddie Cusa, a 41-year-old car dealer, in the head, the tabloids touted them as the real-life Thelma and Louise.
This is another situation with gun and violence with people. Trying to keep control, but I'm very nervous at the same time. And I'm like, I'm out of here.
Linda was immediately arrested. For 2 days, Bernadette was on the lam, hiding at a friend's home. She was ultimately caught when her foster parents tipped off police.
They find Bernadette, and they send a SWAT team.
They just swarm, come get on the ground and everything.
They arrest her, and then in her pants, in her crotch, is the gun that was used to shoot Eddie Cusa.
Both women were charged with the attempted murder of Eddie Cusa. Bernadette's gun was also linked to the shooting of Jay and Kevin Carroll.
In 23, Bernadette had a rap sheet. The sheriff, at his press conference, lets the rap sheet drop to the floor. I mean, it was long.
The judge's worst fear had materialized. Bernadette had nearly killed 3 people. But this time, the system would make her pay.
They made the decision that we cannot afford to lose this case.
While awaiting trial behind bars, Linda and Bernadette exchanged love letters filled with pledges of eternal loyalty and some seasoned jailhouse advice.
Just don't say anything, Linda. Just be quiet. Don't give them any more information. And we were in agreement with that.
They're on separate floors of the Broward County Jail, and they're sending each other these mushy love letters. We can stand together and we'll get out of this.
With the victim, Eddie Cusa, on life support, the prosecution was faced with the dilemma that the defendants might create reasonable doubt by blaming one another. They met with Linda Goodmode and made her an offer.
Here was the deal that the state attorney made with Linda. 5 years prison in exchange for testimony against Bernadette if she passes a polygraph, and she does.
The love affair between Bernadette and Linda came to an abrupt end when Linda accepted the DA's deal. 5 years in prison in exchange for testifying against the woman she claimed to love.
Linda sends a letter to Bernadette and says, this is a new start for me. So, sorry, babe, but checkmate. And then Bernadette writes back and says, I'm gonna kill you.
It crushed Bernadette when Linda turned. And she didn't just turn evidence, she turned hard.
She wrote nasty messages on the wall of, you're gonna rot in prison, bitch, and stuff like that. And it was an emotional disappointment of betrayal, loss of love.
Then, a medical miracle. Eddie Cusa, despite being shot point blank in the temple, woke up. He was adamant that it was Linda Goodmode who shot him, not Bernadette.
Now, I'll always remember the way that Eddie told this to me at that moment. He's on the bed, and that it's the cute one who shoots him. It's Linda.
Mr. Cusa had actually said it wasn't me that shot him, that it was Linda. And I was like, that was a big relief.
But Eddie Cusa's story didn't match the DA's theory of the case.
Eddie's wife, Ann, tells the cops what Eddie said. But the state attorney is already in the process of making a deal with Linda. It's a complete mess. Now, they interview Eddie's brain surgeon. He's been shot in the head. They ask, now, is his memory reliable? And the brain surgeon says, probably not.
Mr. Cusa's brain prevented him from remembering specific details of what happened. So they had a choice of either Linda or Bernadette. Bernadette was the star villain.
The trial, like the crime, was sensational. Everyone wanted a glimpse of the sexy stripper, the bad girl shooter, and the man who returned from the dead.
All I remember, okay, who had the gun who tried to kill me? The other one, not there in the bottle. Not this one, it wasn't this one. The other one, kill him.
Despite Cusa's riveting testimony identifying Linda Goodmode as the shooter, the jury sided with the prosecution that it was Bernadette who actually pulled the trigger. Bernadette Eady was found guilty of the attempted murder of Eddie Cusa and the Carroll boys.
The judge sentences Bernadette to 5 life sentences.
I'll never forget. He said, if I could, I would sentence you to death, to the death penalty. You don't deserve to be around anybody. You're a piece of dirt. You're lower than dirt. I cried. I just cried. I cried. My life was over.
Although still culpable, Linda Goodmoat's plea deal required her to serve 5 years in state prison. She served only two and was released.
Disappointed that she just walked away from it smooth.
Back in Boca Raton, Eddie Cusa was still mad as hell that no one believed his story.
Everybody in that courtroom, from Linda Goodmoat to Bernadette to the prosecutor to myself, knew this is not the truth. It's not.
Bernadette Eady is serving 5 life sentences in a maximum security prison in Florida. She sees her life as a cautionary tale and hopes that young people can learn from her mistakes.
Life is, it's long, but it's very short. And to try to just make the best person that you can be, I've always let my emotions rule me. And you gotta let your better mind rule you.
Bernadette has had no contact with her former lover, Linda Goodmoat. She will spend the rest of her life thinking about how she threw away her freedom on a woman who she feels stabbed her in the back.
All I can do is live each day as it is and try to make it better. I got my chance and I blew it.
Coming up, a family that slays together.
How do you convince your kids to carry out a murder plot?
Stays together.
I went to live with her. She's my biological mother.
She threatened Junior Mills, saying that she was gonna shoot him and sink him.
Junior was screaming and yelling and cussing and grabbing a hold of me.
I killed a man, but I did it while protecting my family as a whole.
My name is Leilani Mills, and I am serving a 27 and a half years sentence for aiding and abetting my husband's murder.
It was a cold November morning. The day trippers who fished this pristine expanse of Indiana's Patoka Lake were long gone.
We're located on State Road 145. We're right near the Crawford-Orange County lines. Here is where the case began.
A motorist spotted something that resembled garbage bobbing eerily along the graying bank.
When a body decomposes, it's basically just like a balloon inflating. Gases will build up inside. That's what causes a body to float to the surface.
With flies still swirling, police fished out the corpse of 39-year-old Forrest Mills Jr.
He had been in the water at least 12 days. The body was fully clothed when he was recovered, still had boots on.
The victim, Forrest Mills Jr., known to everyone as Junior, had been shot in the face and was missing most of his jaw. Whoever put him in the lake weighed him down with cement blocks, but not very well.
Apparently one of the cinder blocks had broken off.
He had some massive injuries to his facial area, which appeared to be from some type of shotgun blast.
He'd been dead for almost 2 weeks, but no one had reported him missing. Forrest Mills Jr. was already a ghost.
It's not like his coworkers missed him. He didn't work. The family that he did have was strung out in different states, so no one knew when he came up missing.
Almost immediately, the investigation focused on his family. Police uncovered a complex web where Junior Mills was murdered in a twisted show of maternal loyalty, masterminded by his wife, Leilani, and executed by her son, Dallas Mayberry.
She was the ringleader of young, troubled kids. She took advantage of that. It was an odd dynamic. He had odd characters.
Just an unpaved road or two from the lush farmland of southern Indiana are vacant fields littered with condemned homes and rusty trailers. This is the seedier side of the heartland, where meth is king, poverty is epidemic, and 4 out of 10 girls get pregnant before they're 18.
This is a rural, very close-knit community. Family abuse, it has always been around, but this isn't an area that has a lot of homicide.
But a homicide did take place just up the road, where the family of Leilani and Junior Mills was living. with her three sons and two roommates, seven to a trailer.
It was an old trailer. It had been repainted and had different materials used as underpinning to try to keep some of the weather out. And it was dilapidated, didn't have a phone of its own.
We never went hungry and always had clothes and stuff. We were able to pay our bills.
But according to police, that's not how one of their neighbors remembered it.
She saw the boys dragging this rotting pig carcass across the yard and that they said they were going to eat it. And she told them that they would get sick. And Leilani was just like, what? It'll be fine. We'll eat it.
Leilani Mills was born poor in the tiny town of Mauny, Illinois.
I always felt like I was nothing and was always going to be just nothing. My grandparents raised me. My mother was mentally ill, and my dad, he really didn't care much either way.
Pregnant and penniless, at 20, Leilani gave up her son Dallas for adoption soon after he was born.
I wasn't ready to raise a child.
Two more marriages resulted in sons, Adam and Daniel. Hoping that the fourth time would be the charm, Leilani met and married Forrest Mills Jr. in 1997. Then she and her teenage sons moved into Jr.'s double wide. Things seemed good for a while.
She seemed like someone that would have been nice for my brother. She wanted Jr. to adopt her boys, Daniel and Adam, because he loved them and they loved him. And she thought that he was a wonderful man.
Jr. never did adopt the kids. Still, he supported the family with his disability check.
He wasn't able to do a whole lot physically, and I think mentally he was slower than most.
Nevertheless, Leilani claimed she loved her husband, despite his challenges. But Junior's family doubted her sincerity.
Leilani was a lot smarter than my brother. Even though she was telling my mom that she was going to take care of Junior, she was controlling and bossy.
Things soured when a few months after they married, 18-year-old Dallas Mayberry, the son Leilani had given up for adoption as a baby, came for a stay and never left.
When I went to live with her, it was basically because I wanted to get to know her better. She's my biological mother.
He's a very precious young man. I thought it'd be wonderful just to get to know him.
The double wide was home to Junior, Leilani, and Leilani's three boys. Despite the cramped quarters, she invited her son's friends, Albert Apple, and his girlfriend Tiffany Stahl, to move in too.
The culture of poverty, where people get very close very quickly, they're like fast friends, and they develop this extreme loyalty very quickly.
With money tight and the living situation even tighter, the tension in the household was thick.
Some of the neighbors told the police that Leilani was violent with Junior Mills, that she was verbally abusive, saying that she was just going to shoot him and sink him.
But Leilani's son Dallas argues that it was Junior who bullied his mom.
They was arguing over something, and Junior backhanded her really hard, and I snapped. I jumped up, I punched him, and we went to fight. I mean, because it all happened so quick. That was my first inclination that this dude is really insane.
According to Junior's family, when Leilani's oldest son, Dallas, assumed the dominant male role, Leilani's clan followed their mother's lead, and Junior became the odd man out.
When Junior would call my mother, he would tell them that they were doing illegal things with his money and that he had threatened to report them, and that they had in turn threatened to kill him if he did.
I think she just wanted him out of the picture. Her weird sense of morality and the way she saw life was different.
But Leilani argues that if she had wanted Junior dead, she could have staged an accident.
I like to go hunting. I could have had a hunting accident happen at any time. But that didn't happen.
Coming up, a son's deadly confrontation.
I love my mom. I freaked out. I killed a man. I blew his face off. He was never supposed to go that far.
And later,
she had been kissing on the jawbone had been sucking on it. At the sentencing hearing, she even exclaimed, "I'm not a cannibal, I'm not a cannibal."
Less than a year after Leilani and Junior Mills were married, Leilani, her three sons, and two roommates all moved into a dilapidated double-wide in the woods. But this was not one big happy family.
Junior had a lot of people fooled. One minute, Junior could be a fantastic guy. The next minute, he'd be going off.
She was scared to leave him. He threatened to kill her if she ever left him.
They were living in poverty. They had mental health issues. It's just a bad recipe.
In fact, it was a recipe for murder. Prosecutors believe the plan was cooked up by none other than Junior's wife, Leilani, and carried out by Dallas Mayberry, the son she'd given up for adoption.
This was Leilani's fourth marriage. She didn't have any real problems getting into and out of marriage. She was just tired of Junior.
In her mind, he needed to be eliminated. So she gathered her family and her young children and assigned them this task, and they dutifully responded.
The only talk we had was about his abuse and his abusive behavior. Killing him never even crossed our mind. And then we had discussed turning him over to the law, but then I was like, yeah, what are they gonna do? Give him a piece of paper saying, stay away from her.
On the evening of October 28, 1998, Leilani and her teenage brood were driving back from running errands in Jasper, Indiana.
They had her eldest son, Dallas Mayberry. They had her two younger sons and their roommates, Albert Apple and his girlfriend, Tiffany Stoll.
Police say that it was there, in the packed van with all the children present, that Leilani decided to kill her husband, Forrest Mills Jr.
They talked up this whole plan about killing Junior Mills. For whatever reason, we don't know. The plan was that everyone would go in the trailer except for Albert, and that he would wait outside for a period of time and then make some noises and act like a prowler was out there.
Forrest Mills was lured out of the house to that garage. Albert Apple knocked on the trailer, acting like a prowler, to get him to come out. Dallas Mayberry came out with Leilani Mills. Gunshots were fired by Dallas Mayberry. He was struck in the face, was shot at least twice more.
He still didn't die right away, so apparently Leilani and Dallas got a rope and tried to strangle him to get him to die quicker. I'm sure those last 5 or 10 minutes were probably just horrific for him.
Statements from the roommates, Albert Apple and Tiffany Stoll, corroborate the police's theory of events. But Leilani and Dallas maintain that they killed Junior in self-defense.
What really happened that night was my husband, Junior, he was very angry. He was screaming and yelling and cussing and grabbing a hold of me.
He really flew off the handle and said, "I will kill every one of you." And he flew out the door. I instinctively knew exactly where he was going, and I followed him. And my mom followed me. When we got out to the garage, he had got one of the rifles.
I know he had the gun pointed at me.
I grabbed the shotgun and blacked out. I know I shot him. I know I shot him because he's dead.
My life totally changed, and everything just went completely numb.
I love my mom. I freaked out. I killed a man. I blew his face off. I don't feel like what I did was astronomically bad because it wasn't cold-blooded murder. That's not what this was.
Police believe that Leilani then ordered her 13 and 15-year-old sons, Adam and Daniel, and roommate Tiffany, to clean up the crime scene and get rid of whatever pieces of Forrest Mills Jr. they could find.
The shotgun blast blew away part of Forrest's jaw, and there were teeth and bits of flesh around the yard.
She was directing these young children to help in a cover-up of a murder.
While Tiffany and the Mills children lit bonfires around the trailer and burned the evidence, Leilani, Dallas, and Albert drove Forrest Mills Jr.'s body to the Patoka Reservoir.
The body was loaded.
It was brought to the bridge that you see in her background. There were two cinder blocks that were attached to the body.
I was guilty at dumping his body in the lake. He was already dead.
Before they got there, though, one of the ropes broke off one of the cinder blocks, and they're all like, screw it. So they throw him in the Patoka Reservoir.
Failure to secure the cinder block would be the difference between getting caught and getting away with murder. Coming up, a paranoid ringleader puts her trailer on lockdown.
Tiffany Stoll and Albert Apple are pretty much prisoners. They're in the trailer.
They were fearful for their own lives.
Tiffany's on the phone to the sheriff's department, and they're putting all the pieces together.
According to police reports, on October 28, 1998, Leilani Mills and her son Dallas Mayberry lured her husband Forrest Mills Jr. to his death. While they disposed of the body in a nearby reservoir, the younger boys and their two live-in friends were ordered to destroy evidence at the crime scene. After dumping the body, Dallas too joined in the cover-up.
So I'm going to get rid of as much evidence as I can and hope to God that no one finds out.
Fear of getting caught gave rise to pervasive paranoia. Roommate Tiffany would later testify that Leilani threatened to kill her and Albert if they ever told anyone about the murder.
Albert Apple said they watched him night and day. He was literally scared to death of them. And every time they'd get alone, Tiffany would talk to him about, let's get out of here. And he kept saying, I'm afraid, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do?
Afraid for her life, Tiffany found an opportunity and escaped. She then called police.
Tiffany finally gets away from Leilani long enough to place a phone call to the Orange County Sheriff's Department about the same time as a passing motorist sees Junior Mills' body floating in Patoka Reservoir.
A single cinder block would not hold down Junior's decomposing body for long, and it eventually surfaced.
The Patoka Reservoir is a huge place. It'd be easy to hide a body there if you were smart enough to tie it down really good.
When Tiffany's tip-off connected Junior's body to the Mills clan, detectives drove to Leilani's trailer to investigate.
I had almost 2 weeks to clean up the crime scene before the body was discovered in Patoka Lake.
There was obvious burn piles in front of the garage, beside it, and also near the house. The yard was freshly raked.
Police staked out the area, and when the family pulled in, they made their move.
As soon as we pulled off the road, we got surrounded by SWAT team. They ambushed us.
They told me to get out of my van, put my hands up.
My life, everything flashed before my eyes. I knew my life was over.
Investigators combed the crime scene for evidence that linked the Mills clan to Junior's murder.
There was approximately 50 separate pieces of evidence collected in this case. DNA material, there was a firearm, there was actual blood and tissue found in the back of the van.
Although never recovered, one piece of evidence continued to make headlines, Junior Mills' jawbone.
It's actually just a very small piece of bone and a tooth. Leilani, according to one witness, kept it as a sort of a keepsake before later on flushing it down the toilet.
There were different allegations that she may have even eaten part of it.
I mean, this cannibalism, although that was just a bunch of publicity for the newspapers or something.
None of that's true. Cannibalism is not my choice of living.
Leilani would soon find that accusations of cannibalism were the least of her problems. By November of 1998, prosecutors were certain that they had enough evidence and eyewitness testimony to convict Leilani Mills and her son Dallas Mayberry for the murder of her husband, Forrest Mills Jr.
We had forensic evidence and we had all the admissions by various individuals involved that made it a very strong case. I think defense realized that.
Soon after finding the body, as the prosecution was building a case, officers informed Jr.'s family of the murder. Their worst fears about his marriage to Leilani had come true.
Shortly before he was murdered, he contacted my mother and also my brother and expressed fear for his life. But we never realized that it was to a point to where anything of that magnitude was gonna happen. It was overwhelming. It was beyond anything you can imagine.
Leilani and her sons were interrogated multiple times by police, but the boys remained loyal to their mom.
Leilani and her sons were fairly close. They were painstakingly careful to implicate their mother as little as possible in this homicide.
To make mom happy, Dallas had to pull a trigger and kill a man to make his mom proud.
Dallas Mayberry faced the death penalty while Leilani Mills was looking at a life sentence. When the prosecution offered them plea bargains, they reluctantly accepted.
I had people that was willing to come in as witnesses to the fact that Junior was abusive, and the attorney said, oh, there wouldn't be no need for that.
After a few months went by, I eventually broke down. I said, you know what? The death penalty frightens the crap out of me, so I'll take the plea bargain.
In 2000, Leilani Mills and Dallas Mayberry were sentenced to 55 years in state prison for their respective roles in the murder of Forrest Mills Jr. Even though they both pled guilty, they'll only serve half of their sentences.
For murder, the presumptive sentence is 55 years. But in Indiana, you only have to serve half of that sentence.
And she's not the one that actually pulled the trigger, but she certainly was the person responsible for this crime occurring.
I am extremely confident the right people were arrested for this, and they did receive appropriate sentences, in my opinion, as well.
Deeply offended over what she perceived as biased reporting in the news media, Leilani took the opportunity to set the record straight at her sentencing.
She did make a very vehement denial that she was not a cannibal. She's totally ruined her sons' lives, induced her children to commit crimes. She killed her husband, but she stopped short of being a cannibal. You know, she's not gonna cop to that.
I would just hope and pray that people would not believe everything they hear about me.
Never once did we look into her eyes in the courtroom and make any eye contact with her that indicated she was genuinely sorry for anything that she had done.
Junior's family remains bitter about the plea agreements.
It's very disturbing to know that Dallas and Leilani could possibly be released and resume their life together when my mother will never, ever be able to have another day with her son.
I'm gonna take full responsibility for what I did because I killed him, you know, but it wasn't in cold blood.
I used to let the guilt and everything eat me up, but I can't think like that anymore. I'm very sorry that his life ended the way it did. I really don't know if it would have ever happened any different than that.